would you spend the last months of your life? Would you quit your job and travel around the world? Would you devote your time to your family? Would you take on a cause that is important to you and work on that in your remaining time on Earth? All of the above? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When former President Jimmy Carter received his cancer diagnosis, he prioritized working on causes that he cares deeply about. And that got us thinking, what would we do if we only had a short time left here on Earth, if we knew we were going to die, say, in 100 days or 3 months or 6 months? What would you do? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Ira Byock, a palliative care physician and public advocate for improving care through the end of life. He is executive director and chief medical officer for the Institute for Human Caring of Providence Health and Services. His two most recent books are The Four Things That Matter Most, a book about living, and The Best Care Possible. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much for being with us. Well, you know what I like? That one of your books is a book about living. You don't just help people die. You want them to live before they die.
Well, it's only about living. Mm-hmm. You know, I know nothing about death, actually, at all. Never met anybody who convinced me they do. We're all simply living until we die. And I think the question that the human condition asks of us is, well, how then shall we live? You know, how are you going to make the best of this? What matters most? That's really the question that I think you're asking this morning, and I think it's both brilliant and courageous to do so.
Well, I don't know how brilliant or courageous it is, but it did. We were talking about this because President Carter talked about what a wonderful life he has had so far, and that he certainly wasn't giving up on life. He's going to be receiving treatment for his melanoma that spread to his brain, but he is going to continue to work on causes that he cares deeply about, and that made us think. Well, what are those causes that we might devote our lives to, or what would we do if we had just a limited amount of time left, or that we knew? I mean, all of us, you're right, all of us are dying, but if you knew you only had a short time to live.
But that's the point, and I'm eager to hear what listeners think. The fact is that the awareness that we will eventually die, that this time on Earth is limited, is really a species-specific characteristic. No other species that we know of has an awareness of death. And so the question that you're asking is really a question that is the backdrop of all of our lives. And you know, Jimmy Carter has given us a fabulous example. Once again, he's living his life consistent with his values and his really considered considerations of what matters most in his life.
Yeah. So, how do people tend to react to the news that their lives may be ending soon?
In many ways, it's certainly highly individual. This is such a deeply personal matter for each of us. There is, depending on the circumstances, often a sense of shock, of recoiling. It's in many ways the worst news that anybody could hear. And yet there's often a sense of settled reality, in a sense. You know, the second shoe has fallen now. Okay, now we know. And it is clarifying. And once people sort of get over that sense of shock, disbelief, sometimes denial, which is not always unhealthy, it's absolutely normal. They begin to sort of settle into that. Okay, this is my life now, but it's not easy. It's a hard and deeply personal experience for everyone. There is, however, life after learning that you have a condition that will eventually cause your death. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're learning. Jimmy Carter, President Carter, is certainly living that. I'm struck by recently many of us have followed the late illness and now the death of Oliver Sacks, the mm-hmm. neurologist who, while he was living with a metastatic tumor, also was writing about it very cogently in the New York Times and elsewhere, and again gave all of us a lesson of his life about how you live in the shadow of mortality.
Yeah. Are there ways that are healthier than others when it comes to reacting to the news of a terminal illness?
Certainly. I think the honesty that we bring to this, our personal, integrity, if you will, of really saying, okay, time's limited, what matters most? For most people, that's not the stuff that's filling their Outlook calendar or looking ahead. It's been observed, and it's certainly true that few people will say as they are coming to the end of life, I wish I had worked more. I wish I'd spent more time at the office, right? Not likely. As we go through things and really use this clarifying experience, unwanted as it is, to ask, well, okay, so what matters most now? What I have found is that the things that matter most to people aren't things at all. For most of us, it's other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ask somebody who's being wheeled into, transplant surgery or somebody who's facing cancer chemotherapy for the third time or fourth or fifth time. What matters most to you now? And the answer will always include the names of other people, people they love, people who are important to them. That from in my over 35 years of practice, is a constant that runs through the human condition. It doesn't matter what age the person is, the color of their skin, the language that they speak, their diagnosis, their country of origin. This one seems to be a constant. We matter to one another. And so in my counseling and kind of journeying with people who are seriously ill, I tend to listen carefully as they talk about their lives and what matters most to them. And then, to the extent possible, provide them a bit of guidance about what other people who I've had the privilege of knowing during these last months or weeks of their lives have taught me about what matters most to them and how they can live fully during this time. It often does, frankly, involve matters relating to relationships.
Yeah. So I take it that other people, our relationships with other people, that's one of the four things that matter most. I don't have your one of your recent books.
So yes. So I'll give it away.
Mm-hmm.
The four things that matter most aren't things at all. They're actually four sentences, 11 words. Please forgive me. I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. It turns out that, if you're wondering what really you need to do to get ready, to not just end a life, but to feel complete before you leave this life, it often boils down to at least having said four things, those four things, or some, in your own words, to the people who you love or once loved. Right? Please forgive me. I forgive you. Because let's face it, there hasn't been a perfect relationship in the history of our planet.
Mm-hmm.
Even the most close and loving relationships tend to be marked by some history of hurt feelings or misunderstandings in the past or, sometimes real transgressions. So saying please forgive me and I forgive you is just good, relational tending. And then thank you and I love you is so often, for so many people, really an exercise in stating the obvious. But boy, in these circumstances, making it explicit really can be a gift that keeps on giving to the people you're going to leave behind. And in my experience, saying those things even if you think they don't need to be said, really gives people a sense of comfort that if, heaven forbid, they were to die suddenly today, and really, as any of us might, they have less concerns that there are important things left undone or unsaid to the people in their lives that matter to them.
That is profound. And, you know, it makes me think you don't have to wait until you get that terminal illness diagnosis to say those four things.
No, you know, I often say to people, you don't have to be dying for these four things to matter. You really just have to be mortal. And even if you think you're immortal, right, if you love somebody who's mortal, well, really think about it. That's enough to put you at risk, right? They might die at any time, and then you would have lost the opportunity to say those things before your relationship comes to an end, right? Please forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. I love you. It's a way of being complete in your relationships. Not that a relationship really needs to end to say those things, but complete like a circle is complete. You know, when it's unbroken, that's what, frankly, as somebody who counsels people with serious illness, that's what I hope for them, that they can actually have a sense of completion. And I know it sounds paradoxical, but a sense of well-being, real well-being is possible during these difficult, unwanted times of life. And I think that's what President Carter is also giving us evidence for. That while we talk about, you know, end-of-life care as being about avoiding suffering and too much medical care and, you know, all of the stuff that fills the newspapers and these poignant stories that make headlines, the fact is that for many people, the opportunity for not just good care and a sense of comfort physically, but a sense of well-being is actually possible during this difficult and unwanted but remarkably rich time of life.
We are talking with Dr. Ira Byock. He is a palliative care physician, public advocate for improving care through the end of life. He is the author of many books. His two most recent books are The Four Things That Matter Most, a book about living, and The Best Care Possible. And we wonder, what is your answer to this question? If you received a terminal or very serious diagnosis, how would you choose to spend your time? Who or what matters most to you? Would you take on a cause that is important to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. How would you spend your last months or weeks of your life? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking about how we can live when we know we are dying with our guest, Dr. Ira Byock. And we are welcoming your own thoughts on this, your own experiences. Have you witnessed someone close to you embracing life and legacy as they approach death? We would love to hear about them. Are there certain causes that are important to you that you would work on, like a former President Jimmy Carter said he would be devoting his life on working on causes that he cares deeply about following his cancer diagnosis? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Gary on Facebook writes, if I happen to be working on a useful project, I would finish that up, then I would go to Hurley and have a few beers and a few laughs. So Ira, I think he is, saying that he would finish up some important work he's doing. But then what Hurley is a community in northern Wisconsin. And he, I guess, probably a town that he likes to visit, or maybe it's his hometown. How about just having a few beers and a few laughs?
You know, I think that's totally healthy. Yeah. What's important is to make sure that there's nothing that you feel would be left undone. Right, as long as your affairs are complete, and I mean your business and legal affairs, that's for sure, but also your relational affairs, then actually celebrating life and relationships seems to me to be entirely healthy. But just make sure things are tidied up. You know, turn over the important projects that you might not finish and you'd want to see complete before you leave this life. You know, the bank accounts, please give people your passwords, right? Let them get into that Facebook account and close it. Because you can save your family a lot of strife by just telling them what matters to you, giving them basic information so that tidying up your affairs afterward is not onerous. Celebrating is really a very healthy way of living fully during these times.
Yeah, and that's good advice. I mean, we can go work on causes that are important to us, or go travel the world. But that's very practical advice. We really should make sure that our affairs are in order, so to speak, because we don't want to leave our loved ones struggling when we leave.
One of the nicest things, most generous things that my mother ever did, I think, was after she died suddenly, and my sister and I were forced to, you know, close her apartment and really tidy things up. We found that she had a file box full of everything that we needed, all of the papers really well organized for us, so that in case she died at any time, we would know where things are and wouldn't have to spend hours and days, if not weeks, trying to sort through things to close her accounts and even deal with the insurance policies and her funeral arrangements and the like. And, you know, my sister and I looked at each other and thought, boy, she's still taking care of us. Isn't this remarkable?
Yeah. She was saying, I love you one more time, too.
Exactly.
We have lots of callers, so let's go to Cliff in Appleton. Hello, Cliff.
Good morning. Sometimes the warning that you might be about to die can come quite quickly. To make a long story short, a month after lithotripsy, I got into trouble for kidney stone fragments completely blocking one of my ureters, and I had emergency surgery. I told the nurse that morning at Appleton Medical Center that I thought I might die in this building one day. She says, not today, you won't, not on my shift.
Oh.
Fast forward a couple of hours, they bring me out of the anesthesia really fast, and there's a new surgeon there. He says, everything went wrong in the first surgery. You need a second emergency surgery, but you must be aware you can have stroke, heart attack, or die. You know, but I'm an interventional radiologist, and I believe I can do what needs to be done. My wife was there, and she was looking calm. And so I told her that if I don't make it, I said, I have no regrets. I've had a wonderful life. Tell everyone in the family I love them, and everything's okay. And I kept my poise. But I had seen my father face bypass surgery in the 80s, and he was so calm that I had always meditated on trying to remain calm when that moment came for me. And thank God the guy did save my life. But I didn't have a will. I didn't have things in order. But in that moment, I chose to be calm. And I gave my wife a polite kiss. There was not a lot of emotion. And I went on and, you know, thank God for Anthony Eclavia, a remarkable interventional radiologist.
Well, we're glad all went well, Cliff, and that you're able to tell us about it right now. A reaction, Ira?
Sure. Just notice how Cliff's brush with death clarified what matters most, mm-hmm. and really pointed up, in a sense, what was left undone. I'm guessing, and Cliff, if you're still on the line, you can tell us, do you have a will now? has it changed
every
your
week.
Experience?
Every week I keep, you know, bringing it up and saying I'm going to do that. I'm a master procrastination, I'm ashamed to say.
Well, you know, I think for all of us, this is a good lesson that this is the stuff that needs to happen. We live every day, every hour, every minute, just a heartbeat away from death. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to say that on the air, but, you know, we have to grow the rest of the way up as a culture. You're going to die, right? Let's get over it and then get on with living as fully as we can, as richly as we can, through this incredible gift that we call life. That richness of living in the present includes making sure that we're being utterly responsible to those that we leave behind. So, you know, if heaven forbid any of us dies suddenly today, what's going to be left for the people we love to do? And really, as my mom did for myself and my sister, just putting the time in to do the dot and tittle, you know, fill out the forms and write the notes and all of that stuff is part of living fully as a human being. I think that's part of what I've learned out of 35 years of practice and is a lesson for us all.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dr. Ira Byock, who is a palliative care physician and an advocate for improving care through the end of life. He is also the author of the books The Four Things That Matter Most, a book about living, and The Best Care Possible. We are talking about how we would spend our last weeks or months of life. If you received the news that you only had a limited time to live, how would you spend your last time? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Christopher in Galena, Illinois is with us now. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Ira. I really appreciate the conversation. Thank you so much. I personally just had a really remarkable experience with this. I have a great friend that's dying of lung cancer. She's stage four, and tons of people around the country love her, and we're all friends. Instead of fragmenting our care, we all got together and rented a beach house, brought her down from all over the country. People came. There was about a group of 10 of us, and we sat for a week and told each other the stories we never told and unfolded our lives with her in a way that was completely profound and remarkable for all of us. And I can't imagine a better way to take care of someone who has cancer, but a better way to take care of someone who's dealing with someone they love that has cancer. I highly recommend it. It was a remarkable week, and it changed my life.
It's making me cry. What a wonderful thing to do. Dr. Byock.
Oh, it is, and I'm so appreciative of the call, Christopher. I'm sorry that your dear friend is so seriously ill, but I think you've shown us some things that I love to emphasize to people. First, that there is a sense of healthy defiance that I think the love that we have for people who we know have a limited time to live evokes. You know, the love between two people in the face of death is almost saying to the force majeure, to nature, you can't take this from us. We love one another. And that is really matters most to us. Love is stronger than death in this regard. The other thing that I think your story really shows us all is that it's that there's something healthy about celebrating people before they die. Not uncommonly, I'll be on a phone with a relative in a distant state. I'm helping to care for a seriously ill person, and they say, "Gee, I don't know. You know, I want to come to the funeral, and I don't. If I come now, I don't think I'll be able to take off time, or I won't have the money to come again." And I say, "Well, you know, I don't know when the funeral will be, but I would come now, right? Fred can still talk with you. He's very cognizant and can enjoy your visit. And if there are things that you would say at the funeral and ways that you would want to honor him, I would come now. It's a lot more fun to say those things when people are still alive and can respond. This notion of waking people from life, having the wake before they die, honoring and celebrating them, reminiscing, you know, lifting a glass, laughter, is really, I think, a very, very healthy way of showing our deep respect and love for one another. And again, what you're doing is what I hope to foster in this country, which is a healthy maturation around the way we live as conscious, mortal human beings. So thank you very much for that comment and call and that story. And again, I'm sorry that your dear friend's so ill.
Yeah, Christopher.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you so much, Christopher, calling. Boy, that was very powerful and profound for me as well. You talked about healthy defiance. I'm wondering. Well, a personal experience without naming any names for privacy's sake, but someone who was very clearly in stage 4 cancer and I guess maybe apparent to most people was going to be passing away very, very soon, was having a positive attitude and fighting this and not accepting it until practically she went unconscious. What do you do about that? Somebody who really thinks that positive thinking, or maybe it's just not accepting that you're going to die.
Oh, I think that positive thinking is wonderful, and I encourage it. But one thing we can be positive about is that we're all going to die, absolutely positively. So while we hope for the best and use medical care for its absolute value of fighting disease and helping us forestall death and live longer and live better, it must not be a almost magical, superstitious substitute for acknowledging that all human life will come to an end. We will leave this life and go to something else, whatever one believes. And so it's all about living fully in the present. And there are opportunities during this time we call dying that I think the most of us in our culture really don't see. We think that dying is only about suffering or its avoidance. And I think what we're hearing is that there's really rich opportunity to live into and live through this time. And to really, for many people, it is life-changing, right? So many people that I know come to this latter stage of their life with fractured relationships, with people they love or once loved, that they're not in touch with or still have anger with, a father and son who haven't spoken in years, a previous couple who were married for 20 years until it ended in a bitter divorce. Now, 15 years later, when one or the other is seriously ill, it may matter to them to get back in touch. And here's the thing, that I found that the opportunity to complete a life, to say the things that would have been left unsaid, to say the please forgive me's and I forgive you's and thank you's and I love you's, can actually change the history of a relationship, right? A story that ends well, a bitter breakup or a anger between a brother and sister, previous business partners, best friends that have now been estranged for years, a story of that relationship that ends well in a remarkable way changes everything that has preceded. All that strife becomes prologue to a happy ending, right, to a better ending. Yogi Berra said, it ain't over till it's over, right? And I've learned that chance to write the next chapter, even if it's only a few paragraphs long, is the possibility of changing the history of a relationship and sometimes, Joy, the story of a family. That is why I do this work, frankly. The ability to counsel and help people through these difficult times can be life-changing, not just for the person who's ill, but for their entire family.
Yeah. Let's go to Mindy in Lake Geneva. Hello, Mindy. Mindy, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am. Thanks for taking my call, Joy. It's been a very interesting program. And I just want to say I'm glad that when people get this diagnosis, they're embracing life. But why wait? Why not live every day with purpose and say I'm sorry and I forgive you and I love you? Why let that strife fester in your life? You have a choice every time. So I just don't understand the not embracing the moment right now, the celebrating those people right now before they're dying.
Mm-hmm. Ira?
Yeah, I think the you're absolutely right. I think, frankly, forgiveness gets in the way. People think that they can't offer forgiveness because forgiveness is often confused with exonerating somebody for doing something wrong, for having hurt you. And it's not any of that. The forgiveness at its basis is really not about the other person at all. It's about ourselves. Asking for forgiveness or forgiving others is a way of getting free of all of the baggage that we have been carrying. So while it is a generous spark, impulse to offer forgiveness to others, ultimately we are the recipients of that advantages here. You know, the comedian Lily Tomlin once observed that forgiveness means giving up all hope of a better past, right? It really means accepting that we can't change the past while recognizing that the past need not control our future. So I encourage people, you know, anger is an entirely legitimate emotion. And if you have been wronged and you want to stay angry, well, that's your right. That's your choice. And frankly, if that's what you really decide, you have my blessing. But it's important to know that it's not your only option and that forgiveness really is a healthy, normal response that human beings can take to mend and tend and nurture relationships. And it all rolls up to an advantage for you to live more healthfully, a little lighter, and more fully in the present.
We are talking with a palliative care physician, an advocate for improving care through the end of life, about how to live when we are dying. And of course, we are all dying, but how we can live when we have received a terminal diagnosis. Talking about this because of former President Jimmy Carter, when he received his cancer diagnosis, prioritized working on causes that he cares deeply about. And it got us thinking, what would we do? What would you do? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Former President Jimmy Carter recently was diagnosed with cancer that had spread to his brain. And he said, "I hope for the best and I accept what comes. I've had a wonderful life. I've had thousands of friends." And Carter is vowing to eliminate the guinea worm, a painful African parasite, before the end of his life. And we are wondering, what would you do if you received a terminal diagnosis? How would you choose to spend your last time on Earth? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Ira Byock, who is a palliative care physician, about living when we are dying. And I'm wondering, Ira, what do you make of Jimmy Carter saying, hey, he wants to eliminate this he's vowing to eliminate this painful African parasite. That's what he wants to do before the end of his life. What about people taking on some kind of important cause like this?
Jimmy Carter is taking on this cause, but he's been working toward these ends, as many of us know, all of his life, all of his post-presidency. He's been really just a remarkable human being and leader, world leader in this regard. Jimmy Carter, of course, is also a profound family man and a man of great religious faith. All of the work that we've been talking about that many of us have yet to do, I'm thinking about Cliff, who was facing a life-threatening medical emergency and didn't have a will, and you know, we said afterwards, boy, that's a lesson to you. Well, you can bet that President Carter has all of that done, right? Mm-hmm. His relationship with each of his, each of the people in his life, his children and grandchildren and great-grands, and certainly with Rosalind and so many people who are important to him, are complete. You can bet that he has said his equivalent of those four things to everyone who's important in his life. His relationship between him and his maker is complete. His relationship, I can bet, with himself. You know, so often, we were just talking about forgiveness, so often the most difficult person in our lives to forgive is ourselves, mm-hmm. right? We're hard on ourselves. But the sort of openness and emotional awareness and spiritual awareness with which Jimmy Carter has lived his life really makes me confident that he's done that work. And so devoting himself to a cause larger than himself is very consistent with how somebody whose life and relationships is already largely complete lives fully in the present. Not all that many of us are going to take on a new cause during the latter stages of our life, when we know it's very likely, at least, that we have just months to live. But Jimmy Carter is being authentically himself and living fully in a way that's very appropriate for him.
Sandy in Waukesha is with us now. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Everything that you're saying, thank you for taking my call, by the way. But everything you're saying is just so profoundly obvious, but yet we all overlook it. But the reason that I called is I'm very family-oriented, grew up that way, tried to make my children's lives that way. And now, unfortunately, there's estrangement between a sibling and I, a daughter and I, my daughter, my other daughter and her sister. And so we always, when I was a child, went to a cottage, and all my aunts and uncles and cousins all rented cottages there. And so I guess if I was diagnosed with a limited time to live, that I would rent a giant cottage in Door County, hopefully in Fish Creek where we went, and spend the time with all those people that I love, and that somehow magically, if we were there, that all of the estrangements would be resolved or they just wouldn't even be present, and I could move off this earth to the next one at knowing that my brother would be there for my children. Their father passed away when they were children, so they will have no one when I go. And I just would like for every, I mean, I love all those people so much, but it's just so much has gotten in the way.
Yeah.
And so at that magical cottage in Fish Creek, it would be gone.
Oh, Sandy, and I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Would you want to do that right now, even without the a diagnosis?
No one would come. Or those people that have issues and have divested themselves from the rest of the family, they would not come.
But maybe they would if they knew this was your final time on Earth. Yeah, I get it.
There has to be some magic in those invitations, as well as at that giant cottage where we could fish and have bonfires and do all the things I did as a child and I love to do as an adult. So, you know, I need some divine intervention to make my plan work. I would love for it to happen right now.
Boy, Ira.
Oh, so many people are resonating with what you just said, Sandy, I'm sure. It's a lovely fantasy, but I'm gonna give you some sobering news. That magic may well not come to pass. We have to talk about that, and then we're gonna have to talk about the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny, because that stuff, you know, is a lovely fantasy. But to make that happen, you're going to have to do the relational work of reaching out. Now, I can make it a bit easier for you. Let me just say that we can only take care of our side of any relationship. Each of us, you can only take care of your side of any relationship. And it may be that if things are too hot between you and other people in your family, you may want to use the sorts of things that I talk about in the four things that matter most in a letter so that you can control the message. You know, start by saying, you know, I was listening to this talk show the other day, the Joy Cardine show, and there was this guy on, and he was saying that we're all mortal, and gee, we ought to think about this. You know, over 30,000 people die every year in car accidents, and gee, every day we ought to learn from the fact of that we're all mortal and life is limited. So I know that I haven't been the most perfect sister or wife or, you know, mother, but I want you to know a few important things. You matter to me. I love you, and I know I've screwed up at times. Please forgive me for the times that I've screwed up and I've hurt your feelings. And I want you to know that I forgive you. I know that we're not perfect, and you've hurt my feelings at times. And I know you didn't intend to, or you were reacting out of anger. So please forgive me, and I forgive you, and I love you, and thank you for being in my life. And you know, just start there. See what happens. It's unlikely that they're going to react out of anger, but if they do, well, you've done a good faith effort to express yourself. Don't do it in a frame of mind that's in any way manipulative. Do it authentically. And in my experience, offering and asking for forgiveness, expressing gratitude and love, is pretty safe. It's pretty non-toxic. Right, so I would say don't wait. I hope that time at Fish Creek comes, but I wouldn't bank on it. It's a nice fantasy. Maybe you can make it a reality, but I would start with that today. We're all mortal. Use that. Use this show as a catalyst to say the things that would be left unsaid now.
I will do that. Thank you for the advice, and I want to just make one more comment. Is that I really love Lily, your quote that you said that from Lily Tomlin, and you know, about forgiveness, and it's so true. You just give up on, you can't redo anything. So just, you know, I'm a forgiving person, and I think you can only hope that other people will as well. And there's not just estrangement between me and other relatives. It's between other relatives and other relatives.
Right, right. You want to mend all of those relationships that you're not necessarily a part of. Do you get that, Ira, too? That she's concerned that, what, you know, like two sisters are feuding that, and she doesn't have anything to do with it.
I hear you. Mm-hmm. You know, I think family life is messy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, psychologists talk about the dysfunctional families. I think that phrase is redundant.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Everybody has one.
Everybody lives in a family that's a little messy, and I think you have to keep your heart open, take care of your side of the relationship, and model for them what a forgiving, loving relationship looks
that's
like.
That's modeling it. Thank you, Sandy, very much. You've given a lot of people something to think about. Jerry in Madison is with us. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Jerry, thank you so much for calling. My producer tells me that you do have stage 4 cancer.
I do.
And so how are you dealing with this?
Well, I've been fighting it for 5 years. They're kind of controlling it. If this oral cancer or oral treatment doesn't work, I'm going back to my second round of chemo. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry too, Jerry. Please, we understand. But you are planning an annual fishing trip, or just had one?
No, I'm on my way.
Oh, right now.
I'm actually in my car, going up to do some fishing. During the week, I'm not working anymore. During the week, I'm with my youngest daughter and taking my grandson to school. On the weekends, I'm sorry.
Oh, there's no need to apologize, Jerry. Ira, he's still active. He's spending time with his family, and he's still being treated for his cancer. I guess any thoughts, any advice?
Oh, well, my heart goes out to you, Jerry. This is hard. I think, however, you're doing sounds like exactly what you need to do. Spending time with your children and your grandchildren. You know, you're going fishing. There's, you know, I don't know any place to get closer to God than fishing, sir.
Yeah.
As a fisherman myself, and so I think you're again showing us that these tough times, these hardest times, really crystallize and clarify for all of us really what matters most. I don't envy you, but I have deep respect for what you're going through.
Thank you very much, Jerry, and we wish you all the luck with your ongoing
exactly.
treatment. Ann in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Ann.
This is Tan.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling because my husband, in the last weeks of his life, taught all of us how to live. He was dying. He knew it. He allowed all of us into that process. He invited friends, family, everybody he had known, to simply know that these were his last days, not out of pity, not out of any of that, but out of a true joy, and gave each person the gift of letting them know what they had meant to him. He was a fiercely independent man, fiercely independent. He was still mowing the lawn and doing laundry almost up until the very, very end. He had leukemia. He was shutting down. Things were not working any longer inside his body, but he would push through to the extent that he could and allow everybody in. His gift to me was to tell me that I was a comfort to him. Again, this hugely independent man who could do everything on his own said that and gave me what it would take to allow myself to be alive and fully live after his death. There's no greater gift that a person can give. And I concur. The four things people need to say, they're really important, but they need to say them in their own way, in their own words. And that's what my husband had done.
Thank you very much for sharing that, Ira.
Oh, again, I'm touched by the story, and I think that the wisdom in that is something that we all can learn from. What I've learned over the years comes from experiences quite similar, and I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm grateful for your story.
Yeah, we have less than a minute to go. What would you encourage everyone to consider now about the end of their own life?
That life is a precious gift, but it's a finite gift. And to live it fully, to live healthfully through the very end of life, requires us to acknowledge the fullness of human life and the fact that mortality is, frankly, part of human life. So while this is not a subject any of us really wants to dwell on or think about day in and day out, it really is important to acknowledge that life is limited and then to live fully with your heart open. And for me, again, saying those four things, please forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you, is the most healthy way to live fully in relationship. I think we can all learn from the stories that we've heard this morning. And I thank you again for the courage and really insight to devote the time to this this morning,
well,
Joy.
Well, I've learned a lot, too. Thank you so much for being with us. Ira Byock is a palliative care physician and a public advocate for improving care through the end of life. Thanks to Christy Taylor, to Judith Sears-Poisson, to Elizabeth Deliquest, and to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.